So I'm pleased to be here. Our team is working on the Environmental Protection Agency's rule on lead and copper under the Safe Drinking Water Act and looking at population exposure to lead from drinking water act. And one of the most interesting things about this group is the diversity of its membership, because I'm an attorney by training, and I've worked on lead issues for a couple of decades, and then I'm working with an engineer from Virginia Tech who is working on very specific science and technological issues around the interaction of lead pipe with water, and then with two activists from Washington, D.C., which has experienced severe problems with lead in its drinking water over the last few years, which have gained national attention in part because they've been written up in the Washington Post, which is what Congress reads. What I want to try to talk about in the brief amount of time that I have is, first of all, how does the actual lead and copper rule work, which is fairly complicated? What have we learned since the rule was instituted in 1991 about the unintended consequences of the structure of the rule, which was designed to protect public health but appears to actually be causing an independent public health problem that was unanticipated? And how is our research team trying to address that in advance of what is expected to be a revisiting of the rule by EPA in 2012? The legal framework, the regulatory framework under the lead and copper rule, is something that we've been calling shared responsibility, because it basically divides the responsibility for reducing exposure to lead in your drinking water that you get out of your tap between the public water utility that supplies you water and between you, the owner of the home. And the reason is because lead in drinking water doesn't actually come from the water source, which is where most water pollutants come from. It comes from the water running through the pipes and picking up lead. And so the pipes in your house, the solder in your house, the fixtures, the plumbing fixtures in your house affect the amount of lead that's coming out your tap. And those, at least arguably, the utility has less control over. So you need to establish a sort of a shared collaboration between this regulated entity, which is the public water supply, which is regulated under the Federal Safe Drinking Water Act, and the homeowner, which is not regulated, and that tends to be true for a lot of environmental hazards, right, where we don't directly tell homeowners what they need to do. We try to encourage them to do the right thing. And at the heart of this problem is what's called the lead service line. The service line is just the pipe that connects the utilities pipes out in the street to your house, okay? And the general legal principle is that the utility owns the part of the service line that goes from their system right up to your property line, but you, the homeowner, own the part of the lead service line that starts at your property line, goes into your house, and therefore connects to your plumbing system. So in 1991, under the Safe Drinking Water Act, the Environmental Protection Agency promulgated this lead and copper rule. And while most regulation under the Safe Drinking Water Act simply sets a numeric, what's called maximum contaminant level, so it's a number you can measure, and if you're above that number, then you're violating the Safe Drinking Water Act, and you have to bring the contaminant below that level. But because of this complexity of where the lead is actually getting into the system, the Environmental Protection Agency used a provision in the Safe Drinking Water Act that hadn't otherwise been used, which allowed them to instead regulate lead in drinking water using what's called a treatment technique, which basically says we're going to tell the utility a series of steps they have to take to try to minimize exposure to the contaminant without actually making them hit a numerical limit. And the sort of bad thing about this treatment technique regulatory regime is that it's not as hard and fast enforceable as just having a number. The good thing is that the Safe Drinking Water Act seems to say that you can pretty much require anything you want as part of a treatment technique. So it gives us the ability to think in very outside-the-box ways about what it actually means to regulate environmental exposures and public health exposures. So the way the rule works, very simply, is that it sets a action level of 15 parts per billion of lead, which you have to find by doing monitoring at people's taps, which is very complicated, and part of our research is actually looking at the monitoring regime, but I'm not going to talk about that today. And if a certain number of samples exceed that action level, then there's a series of steps the utility takes, which begin by treating the source water, if that happens to be where the lead comes from, which is not usually the case, optimizing the corrosiveness of the water, because that reduces the amount of lead that's leached out of the pipes, educating the folks using your system, because there are steps they can take, like flushing the water to reduce their own exposure, and then the piece that I want to talk about mostly, which is at some point you have to commit to systematically replacing lead service lines, a certain number of lead service lines. But the way EPA interpreted the meaning of the legal phrase public water utility under the Safe Drinking Water Act, they said you only have to replace the part that you own, which is a problem because only 1% of utilities in the United States own the whole lead service line. The vast majority own part of the lead service line. So what you end up with is not the replacement of the entire pipe. You end up with the replacement of the part of the pipe that the utility owns, and then the lead pipe stays in the ground from the property line into the house. And the thinking at the time in 1991 was, well, it's better than doing nothing at all. You know, it's better to replace part of the pipe than none of the pipe, and the assumption was sort of replacing part of the pipe would proportionately reduce the exposure. So if 80% of the pipe was the utilities and 20% is yours in your house, then if you take the 80% away, roughly speaking, lead in the drinking water would go down to 80%. So you wouldn't get all the way there, but you get part of the way there. The problem is that's not true. The problem is so you have the shared responsibility regime. And what happens is homeowners basically are approached by the utility. This is actually going on in Washington, D.C. right now, and it happens that one of our team members, Yana, is literally on a street where the service lines are being replaced, and so she's actually going through the process as a homeowner, which is adding a lot to the research effort in an interesting way. And they say to you, here's the deal, we're replacing ours. Are you interested in replacing yours? By the way, if you are, you have to pay for it, and it will cost you a few thousand dollars. And so one of the issues we're looking at is actually how is that communicated? Is it communicated to homeowners in a way that makes them more or less likely to actually undertake their piece of the shared responsibility? And then in this structured survey we're doing, we're actually asking homeowners both here in D.C. and in Providence, Rhode Island, where it's also been an issue, a series of questions to determine if the information was presented differently, would they be more or less likely to make the decision to sort of shoulder their part of the shared responsibility and replace their lead service line. The technological problem that Mark Edwards on our team from Virginia Tech is focused on is this issue of, it turns out that if you replace part of a service line, you may actually increase exposure to lead for a variety of different reasons. One is physically disturbing the pipe, so you just shake loose this accumulated, I believe the technical term is crud, which develops on the inside of the pipe, which has a high concentration of lead. The other problem, which I sort of vaguely remember from my days in engineering school, is that when you put the new copper pipe next to the old lead pipe, you get a sort of a battery going, and so you're actually physically extracting lead from the remaining lead pipe and pushing it into the copper pipe. That's a big problem that we're looking at. And then finally, as the water flows from the copper pipe to the lead pipe, you create new crud basically in the copper pipe. So there's a variety of pathways. When we set out to do this, EPA and our team and some other teams around the country were looking at the issue of, could it possibly be true that replacing only part of the service line actually increased exposure to lead at the tap? EPA convened a special science advisory board, augmented it with some members, and they just literally, just in time for this conference, issued their report September 28th, and the SAB report concluded that the available information, while limited, is broadly suggested that partial lead service line replacement may pose a risk to the population. So it may actually be worse than doing nothing. So the sort of legal and public health question that leaves you with is, so now our objective, right, our regulatory objective has to be replacing the entire service line. Because replacing only part of it turns out not to fix part of the problem, turns out to make the problem worse. So while the objective of the original treatment technique was do as much as you can do, that doesn't actually work as a public health matter. As a public health matter, our objective has to be, can we get the whole service line replaced? So for our team, what that means is, can we redefine this shared responsibility on both the utility side and the homeowner side in a way that is more likely to result in decisions to replace the entire service line instead of only part of the lead service line in order to achieve the public health objective of lowering population exposure? This is sort of our theory of change that we developed. I'm not going to go through the whole thing. So there's two sets of responsibilities that we're looking at both sides of the equation. One is the responsibility of the utilities, the public water utilities, and we're looking at the legal question of whether the Safe Drinking Water Act would actually allow the Environmental Protection Agency to mandate that the utilities go beyond the property line and actually have some responsibility for the portion of the service line on the owner's property. And then we're also looking at the issue of how can we adjust the regulatory regime to make the homeowner more likely to make an informed and responsible choice to collaborate with the utility in order to get to full service line replacement. So for the utility side of the equation, there's a series of questions that we've been researching in the sort of legal component. So our research has three components, basically. I'm leading the team on the legal research. Mark Edwards at Virginia Tech is looking at these technical questions around the hazards of partial service line replacement and also how to monitor the water to catch the problem better. And Yana and Ralph are focused on this issue of evaluating the existing public education requirements that are already in the lead and copper rule and figuring out how to modify them. So on the utility side, we're looking at can we sort of redefine the legal meaning of public water utility in a way that reaches over the property line? And interestingly, EPA had proposed the rule that way back in 1991, then withdrew it in response to a procedural challenge and never revisited the actual substantive question, something that happens. And is there anything we could do to make the utility actually help pay for the homeowner's part? And if not, how could we modify the treatment technique to at least make the partial replacement be safer based on Mark Edwards' findings? On the homeowner side, we're looking at could you change the educational regime so that owners are more likely to make the decision to participate? Can you use financial incentives to sort of tilt the balance so that the owner says, yeah, you know, whatever, there's a tax credit, there's a 50% rebate, like with utility energy conservation programs. And could you impose other requirements outside the Safe Drinking Water Act regime, like disclosure, like when you sell your house, if you've chosen to leave your lead service line in place, you're going to have to tell the next person who buys the house that, which might change your mind. And so the interesting thing is where we end up, and I spent a couple of decades working on lead paint hazards in addition to working on lead in drinking water, is that in the initial stage of our work, we've come to the conclusion that there may well be parallels to the sort of the progression of thinking about how to regulate lead paint hazards. In that, initially with lead paint hazards, the focus was on what's the best way to remediate the hazards, which is sort of what the treatment technique approach is under the lead and copper rule. Then there was a realization that, well, in addition to that, we need to think about the role of disclosure because we're leaving some hazards in place, and so leaving part of a service line there is kind of like leaving intact lead paint there, right? In the short term, it may not be a problem, but what do you do in the long term? And then finally, interestingly, the most recent regulatory regime around lead in paint has been what's called the renovation rule, which sort of was the realization that not only do people disturb lead paint when they deliberately go to remediate lead paint hazards, they disturb lead paint. In fact, they're more likely to disturb lead paint when they're just fixing their house up. And the analog to that that we found in the lead in drinking water situation is that the same public water utilities who are resisting regulation under the Safe Drinking Water Act, actually because their systems are so old, go in and just do service line replacement all the time as part of maintenance. And what do? They replace the service line to the property line and stop. So they're doing partial lead pipeline replacement, except they're not doing it under the Safe Drinking Water Act. Can we regulate that? So that's where I'll leave it.
Thank you very much.